claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
November 9th, 1989. History is made. The Berlin Wall falls. Years pass. Decades end. A new century is born. In 2021, one wall remains at Revolution Radio. The wall between Studio A, the Wisdom Circle, and Studio B, the Raw Deal. The wall falls. History is made. Wisdom Circle plus Raw Deal equals the event. James Fetzer. David Scorpio. Giuseppe Vaffanculo. History is made. And now, the event.
Okay, we're live, Jim.
For having me.
We want to hear the whole story. What happened that got you into one of these extermination centers? I think hospitals today qualify as kill zones. It's absolutely stunning. And where you, I believe, were destined to become just one more statistic.
I think so. I had a single car crash at about somewhere in the neighborhood of noon on Sunday, January 30th. Car was upright. I was examining the windshield, which had cracked, but it was still holding together like in the gel. The window next to me was, kind of smashed out. The one to the right of me was. I started examining my body. Everything worked. Everything felt okay. There were just superficial cuts, which have largely healed, just from glass. I felt no pain anywhere. And within 10 minutes, because the Copper Canyon fire rescue is 7 minutes away. And people can go to their Facebook page, Copper Canyon Fire Facebook page, and see three photos of the vehicle. Anyway, the first and only interaction I had was with an EMT who approached the car and was unzipping a little formed pouch. And I saw a syringe and I protested and I said, no, what are you doing? Like, and he said, I'm going to calm you down, boss. And in the needle went. And out my consciousness went. And the next memory I have is waking up full of adrenaline and energy, and I started taking the intubation tube out. After doing so, I followed the tube to my left here, and there was the mechanical vent. And I went for the IV next in my left arm, carefully took that out, and then I went to the catheter. And that was incredibly painful. But I got it out. I started bleeding. I grabbed hospital sheets, and it was bleeding through. I found my cut in half, you know, cut off shorts that were like this big now. I covered that, walked straight to the door, opened the door. Staff was sitting to the left. And I said, why in the heck did you vent me? What is going on here? And it was like they were seeing a ghost, you know, they, like no words. They were just looking at each other like. And I said again, why did you place me on a bed? No answer. Please go back to your room, sir. Go back to your room. And I was like, ah. So I backed up and I got kind of in the door. And I said, I want my attorney now. Like I have an attorney to just, you know, but I was just like, I want my attorney now. And they go, just please, like, settle down. And we all got back into the room just a bit. I continued to ask about the vent, and a young, what I believe to be nurse, said, I said, why am I on this vent? And I'm pointing right to it. And she said, you have COVID. And I said, well, even if I tested positive for COVID, that's a late stage end of the game kind of last resort life support thing. I go, does it look to you like I'm having any issues with my breathing, talking, walking? Do I look all right to you? No answer. And I go, oh, and what drugs are in that IV? And the same snotty young nurse type said propofol, fentanyl, and morphine.
Holy shit.
Now, I can't say whether or not those were all given simultaneously, but propofol will take care of you on its own, you know, or fentanyl. So the wrangling continued, and I was like, I want to know why the heck this vet was used. That was completely inappropriate. I want to leave. I want my lawyer. And they kind of disappeared from the room for a second, then came back, and another person came in. Now, this is probably 25, 30 minutes into this whole thing, and she was holding a piece of paper, and she said, is this a good contact for you? And I said, it was my sister's name and number. And I go, yeah, but I just want to get out of here right now. So they said, we're going to leave you alone with the doctor, and she's going to decide if you can go. And so this weird doctor came in, and her energy was really creepy. You know, they were all wearing masks, and her eyes, they just looked juvenile. All of them looked real juvenile and weird. So she said, produce a little urine. And so it was blood. It was pure blood, but I was able to pass. And she took some bandages off of me, and I go, so I'm leaving then? And she goes, we can't hold you here. And I said, can I get some clothes and an adult diaper, please? So these two young men that had been there the whole time that looked like volunteers or like low-level security, they came back with some clothes for me. I put on an adult diaper, the hospital scrub-type pants, a way-too-tight hoodie, some shoes that didn't fit. They walked me to a metal door. Didn't look like an emergency unit, but I found out today, I found the door I exited, and it was part of the trauma unit. It was just down the side. And I said, how do I get downtown Flagstaff? And one of these kids just pointed, and I walked a mile and change in 9-degree weather and went to the very first establishment that was open and found a guy to help me with a lift home.
Man, it sounds to me like the EMT on the scene sedated you so you could be submitted as a COVID patient. And because you were non-responsive from the sedative he'd given you, they used that as their warrant to put you on a ventilator. I wonder if he was receiving a bonus for every patient he brought in that they could treat as though they were COVID. I mean, this is pretty bad.
Yeah, I can't imagine why the very first thing you would look. Okay. If you're an EMT, you do not know if that person has internal injuries, right? So you want to determine that. But because they had to tear the door off, it was just bent enough. I tried to get out. It was just, you know, when the accident happened. But if I had a neck injury that I was unaware of and they were unaware of and they injected me and my head falls forward, that could have turned out way worse. It seemed like they just wanted me unconscious.
I think that's right. They wanted you unconscious so they could treat you as an EMT and make you another statistic. Giuseppe, those drugs obviously would have kept Ben in a state where he was semi-conscious at best. Your thoughts?
Well, Ben, welcome to the show. It's a harrowing tale. I mean, for people who don't understand, Flagstaff, well, when I was there in 1998, it was really a small town, but it's still a pretty small ski town, down Route 40 a bit from Sedona and Albuquerque, New Mexico. And so I could understand. It seems as though, I guess my question is, did they give you any justification for such radical actions when you were talking to the EMT? They're going to get the jaws of life. One of the right there, you can see fire guy has the jaws of life in his hands. They're getting ready to open the door right now. So, I mean, why would they sedate you, especially if you're conscious and lucid? I mean, it makes no sense. Have they given you any explanation? Have you been able to get the records from the Flagstaff Fire and Rescue?
Those are in the mail, so I'll get those soon. The only thing that was told to a social worker reached out to my sister, and I would find out later another sibling, late that night, and said that they claimed that I was combative, which I think is code for I didn't want that shot.
Right.
But it's still very vexing because as of 5 minutes ago, I just got my fifth call from the hospital medical records because I'm trying to get these medical records. As of yesterday, they said they still did not have my identity. And yet they reached a sibling from the hospital.
Yeah, how did that, I mean, there's just so many. Russ Winter, I can hear you. Your thoughts on this bizarre experience Ben went through.
Yeah, maybe time to get an attorney to demand the medical record. Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay.
Yep.
We can hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so of some of the bigger names that people would recognize.
Hello? Hello?
Are you there, Russ?
Russ.
We can hear you.
Hang on, Ben. Yeah, go ahead, Russ, if you can.
Can you hear us, Russ? He may be having issues.
Ben. Yeah,
go ahead, Ben.
Okay, I was just saying that.
Okay.
Oh, there's Russ.
Yeah, sounds like it's time to get an attorney.
Yeah, what I'm hearing.
The medical records.
Yeah. So today, like right before we went live, the medical records department called me back again and said that the passport card that I had sent front and back was not good enough to get the records, and they needed something with a signature. And so I'm going to send my driver's license front and back.
Yes.
To them, and she said, oh, you have a driver's license? I was like, yeah. What?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Yeah.
Russ, go ahead, Russ. Go ahead.
Hello, Russ. So initially, while Russ is trying to sort out his audio connection issues, initially, your initial video, they claimed they didn't know, they had you as John Doe. You showed the wristband that clearly they didn't know who you were. Yet, how did they contact two different siblings then? And why didn't they update your name as to not John Doe?
Well, yeah, think of how ridiculous the concept is of reaching my sister. They don't know who I am. So then ask my sister who I am.
Right.
Because how did you get her? It my ID and wallet. That picture right there that you're looking at, my coat is in the foreground.
Oh, yeah, I can see it right there.
So not only could law enforcement retrieve that coat, because at this point there's no Fourth Amendment issues, it's a coat that's sitting outside of a vehicle that crashed. They never did. It was put – when I went to the tow place to grab whatever I could out of that car, my coat was on the passenger side seat, and I just grabbed my wallet, and I was like – what? People still don't know who I am? They didn't take my wallet.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. So what I mean, have you had any other encounters with these police or fire and rescue? I mean, they seem like they're really acting like cowboys and real, you know, radical, non-standard operation in all capacities. I mean, why sedate you, especially if you're lucid? I you wouldn't know, but I've been a went back to school midlife, became a doctor of rhino medicine. I've had my own private practice for 15 years and dealt with a lot of different patients. And one of the things that they teach you, and because I got a master's of science in oriental medicine, I've got all the basic training, much as a physician's assistant or a nurse. And one of the things they teach you in trauma care is keep the patient, keep talking to them, right? There's no reason to inject you and knock you out. They should have kept you communicative. I mean, none of this makes sense. And so.
None of it makes sense unless they're trying to create a conveyor belt of COVID patients where the hospitals are given bonuses.
Well, yeah.
For every patient they admit as COVID, everyone they put on a ventilator, and God forbid, everyone that they declare dead of COVID, they're getting big payoffs. So I think we're looking at the initial stage in the conveyor belt of the EMTs at the crash sites introducing an unnecessary drug that's going to make a patient like Ben appear to be unresponsive when in fact they were perfectly conscious and lucid. This is absolutely stunning. Here we got a recommendation that Kevin Harris is the best lawyer in Flagstaff. You want to go for that, Ben? I know the source here, Neil Roberts. He's a very reliable guy. So you want right. Kevin Harris in Flagstaff. You want to reach out to him. I think your case is absolutely stunning. And reveals it's like a cross section of this conveyor belt to make money for the hospitals at the expense of lives, health, and welfare of the American people. I think your case is a classic. Giuseppe.
Without a doubt, we're still trying to get Russ reconnected and still waiting to hear from Basil Valentin. But so Ben, what tell us what, I mean, you were frantic, understandably so, when you did that video several days ago. Where's your head at now, and how do you process everything you've been through?
It feels like I've been so busy with, you know, the first 4 or 5 days, there was so much coming into my inbox, so many interviews. I have so many practical things to tidy up because here I am. I was only coming here for a short time to do one musical project. I was going to produce the guy's music. So I have no car. I have all this equipment I've hauled. So there's all this practical stuff. Like I'll just sell it all and replace it when I get to where I'm going. Trying to get the records. It's been, I feel like haven't fully processed it, but I'm so busy that sort of helps keep my mind off it. But I'm thinking of new things every day, and I'm thinking of, you know, new ways to move forward. And, you know, so much is going to be dependent on what these medical records say, because I've been told in no uncertain terms from people who I trust that these are not going to be accurate, and they'll find a way to smear me, or, you know what I mean? Like, who knows what these things are going to say?
Ben, did you get that attorney's name that Neil Roberts shared? Because that's the guy you want to reach out to. Did you jot it down, Giuseppe?
Kevin Harris. Here, I can put it back up there again.
Okay. You want to go for this guy, Ben. You want to call. When you get off this show, you call this guy and you tell him you got a hell of a case, okay? And you need him.
I will.
And you've had him recommended highly by someone hot, well qualified to make that recommendation. This is by far in your best interest. This could prove to be a super important case, Ben, let me tell you.
Well, this is the best information I've received so far. Besides, you know, I haven't spoken directly to some people who were trying to put me in contact with Tom Renz and his people, but
this guy's in Flagstaff. You're
perfect.
You got the right guy. This is the right guy in the right place. These other people are overwhelmed with other cases.
They are.
You know, this guy can pay attention to you as, you know, this having happened right there in Flagstaff. I think this is sensational. I'm very glad Neil Roberts reached out. Giuseppe.
Well, here's another regular viewer of the shows has given us this. PatientsRightsCouncil.org and get an advance directive and contact the link above advance directive for your state. So there's another possibility. But, yeah, it sounds like Kevin Harris, you should call his office and tell him your story. And, you know, I think people have to understand that the Southwest is the Wild West in a lot of ways. And I lived for 6 years outside of Silver City, New Mexico, which is a small town. Back then was about the same size as Flagstaff. And, you know, they operate on a shoestring budget. And so it makes perfect sense that, that the, hospital, this guy has got COVID, you know, cause 100+ grand in the coffers is a sweet score. And they may very well have been all instructed to act that way. It's the only thing that makes any sense.
Okay. I'm here, Jeff Seppi. Can you hear me?
A script. They're following a script. You're just that character in the script, Ben.
Did you guys just hear Russ? He's on Skype now. StreamYard wasn't working for him. Can you hear Russ? Go ahead, Russ.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, there's a law called HIPAA that you're probably familiar with. It pretty much requires medical people to turn over your medical records. I mean, here in the Czech Republic, they send it to me. If I go to see the doctor, I went to get a knee x-ray the other day. They literally send you the results. There's no asking for it here. It's almost a requirement. So that's a really pretty severe violation of the law right there. So, are you hearing me okay?
Yeah. No, this is good. This is good. This is good. Russ, keep it up.
So that part of it really kind of disturbs me about this whole story. I mean, I would definitely like to hear the hospital's version of it. You know, there's two sides to every story. And probably the time to do it is to ask them, why haven't you sent this gentleman, Ben, his medical reports? What happened to his missing 7 hours? So
it sounds like they're waiting on my driver's license front and back. I sent them a passport card and that did not have a signature. So as soon as we're done here, in addition to calling the lawyer, I'm going to say
you can actually go into the hospital in person and fill out a form and do all that.
I'm an hour there with no car.
Yeah. Okay. The other comment I had is about sedatives. Again, kind of personal experience. When I had my knee surgery 2 years for a ruptured tendon in my knee, I didn't really want to go under. I wanted to be alert, because I kind of have a gag reflex that I need to kind of control. So I didn't really want them to knock me out. And he comes over and says the exact same thing he says for you. We need to calm you, sir. He used the word calm and gave me a sedative. And I got to tell you, that sedative was perfect, because within 45 minutes, somebody's rubbing my shoulder, you know, just tapping me, Mr. Winter, the surgery's over, and I woke up. So they got a lot greater control over the use of sedatives than what they did to you. If they felt you were combative, they could have knocked you down for 45 minutes in the story.
Totally. Yeah, and I think what they mean by combative is the same thing that police oftentimes mean when they say, stop resisting, and the person's clearly not resisting, and they're, stop resisting. I think the level to my combativeness is relegated to the fact that I simply protested the needle going towards me.
Right. Well, come on. These people have handled accidents before. People are agitated. Sometimes they lose their bearings, their orientation. I mean, I was in an accident with my young son years ago and his friend, and just wandered off the scene because there was a police station next door. I got out of the car because I got nailed in an intersection hard, and it kind of jostled my brain. You know, so your brain's literally, you're kind of out of it. I walked to a police station. I came back to the scene of the crash where this guy hit me, and the officer was mad. He was mad. But, of course, I was calm. I said, I'm sorry, officer. This doesn't happen to me every day. These EMT people see this all the time. So I don't care how combative you were. There's no excuse for giving you a knockout shot like this. I just don't understand it. And I think that you got to really make the EMT people document this too.
Yeah, maybe they have body cams or something.
Well, they should have a record of what they administered to you. They may have given you something on the crash site, and then later in the hospital they decided to juice you some more, even though you were just dead to the wind.
Well, they had to. I was there at no point during this was I not completely under until I woke up.
yeah, you're just missing 7 hours. And that's why we really need to get the medical reports from the point of view of the physicians and the medical people attending you.
Right.
What happened to your 7 hours? You know, that's the big question here. What did they do to you during those 7 hours?
They took enough MRIs or X-rays or whatever to determine that I was uninjured. My whole thing here is that I was uninjured. So why would I be heavily sedated 7 hours on?
Exactly.
What the, you know?
Yeah, like, I was sedated for 45 minutes for pretty serious surgery. That's the difference.
Yeah, there's a whole host of things that they can use to have a reasonable amount of time for a window of sedation. And then talk to me. During those 7 hours, they could have asked my name. They could have asked me anything they wanted, but I was not coming out of that sedation until I did.
Well, how did they, if they listed you as a John Doe, how did they determine your siblings? I mean, how did that happen?
Even my family, and there's been a long-going family group email, and they are, my whole family is like total believers in the medical industrial complex, so they're not cool with me. Like, they're like, oh, you're just going off on a tangent. You're a conspiracy theorist. Yeah. I'm sure the hospital did everything they could to help you, whatever. But the sister that they did reach was like a high-level administrative person in a hospital and was a social worker. She still has no idea how they could have reached her but still didn't know who I was. And like I said earlier, ask her who I am if you have her on the phone. She knows my date of birth. Presto. So they didn't know who I was until I sent my passport ID yesterday.
I do have a question for you, and I don't mean this disrespectfully at all. It's just to kind of get the context.
Stand by.
Okay, stand with hold.
Okay.
Right back, band amp, spray.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomsteps.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We're here with Ben Johnson, who's recounting his harrowing experience, having been in an automobile accident, having been sedated by an EMT, and then put on a ventilator as though he were a COVID patient when he had been conscious and alert, minor injuries, no justification. They were even incubating him, and we all know hospitals are being paid a bonus for every patient they admit as COVID. Another for every patient they put on an incubator, and an even larger for those they declare to be dead of COVID. Russ, you are raising some good questions here. Please rejoin the conversation.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you this question with love, actually. But if this thing gets litigated, the thing that kind of came to mind is that this hospital is going to claim maybe that you're manic depressive. So the question I ask of you really, and it doesn't really bear on the case one way or on the other, because if you're a manic depressive, if you have a history of manic depression, you're actually more vulnerable to this type of stuff than the average person, because they really got you if you're in that category. So I just ask you, with love, if you have a history of manic depression.
Nope. Okay. I feel pretty good almost every day. Yeah. I mean, the last 2 years has been tough for all of us. But no history.
But no episodic, like in your younger days of manic depression. Okay. All right. That's a good answer. I mean, that's a very important, I think that's a very important point to get out, because they may claim that. They may claim, well, he appeared to be having a manic episode. So we knocked him out for 7 hours and put him on an incubator.
Rush, don't you think the key move was the EMT, giving him a sedative right off the bat? I mean, that seems...
Yeah, but we don't really know, we don't exactly know how the sedatives were administered. Did the first sedative knock him out for 7 hours, or did they keep him under for an hour and then get him to the hospital and nail him again? So we don't know the sequence. That'd be a logical question any jury would ask.
Anything could have happened while I was out of consciousness. They airlifted me to Flagstaff. There is a Verde Valley hospital closer by. I do not know why I went there, given the fact that I was not injured to the extent that required going to a level one trauma center. I think that
Ben, that is such an excellent point. taking you to a facility higher than required by your injuries appears to me to be prima facie evidence that this was a rigged game, that they were deliberately taking you as part of a conveyor belt to jack up the hospital's take off of the COVID fraud. I mean, this is outrageous. Russ, don't you agree that's a powerful evidential indicator?
Yeah, and these hospitals are corporate-owned. I'd be very curious what corporation owns this particular hospital and what kind of a – they have other data points like this. This is really corporate type of mentality. Oh, let's get this guy in certain types of treatment so we can collect money. And a lot of these hospitals are kind of hurting for business because people aren't going in and doing their elective surgeries and whatnot. So I think a real important question is who owns this hospital?
The hospital. Okay. So the helicopter company and EMT is owned by Action Ambulance, which sounds very private to me. It's a private thing. But the hospital itself, I believe, is nonprofit. However, just this morning, I went on their Yelp reviews, and you wouldn't believe the stuff that's in there. Former employees saying, do not come here. I would never want to be treated here. Pretty bad reputation.
Wow. Wow. That's fascinating.
That's good homework, Ben.
Yeah.
That puts it in context.
Giuseppe, your thoughts?
Well, this is interesting. Action Ambulance, I just did a Google search on it. Action Ambulance billing is now permanently closed. It's located in Cottonwood, Arizona, which
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but there's another one.
Oh, there's another one? Okay.
Yeah, that's the first thing that I saw too. But, I think that they just moved their.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Operation. They are sending me a bill. I can't wait to pay for that helicopter ride.
Do you have health insurance that would cover it?
No, sir.
All the best. Call that attorney ASAP, man, as soon as we get off this.
Well, even the helicopter ride is kind of churning. It's running up cost unnecessarily.
Yes, yeah.
Really, you just pick up everybody that has a little crash on the side of the road and put them on helicopters and fly them out of there? Is that typical of that part of the country?
Well, here's what I went back to the tow place to pay him, and the owner of the tow company was like a super cool, funny dude. And he said that he thought this is exactly what he said. I go, why was I airlifted? He goes, I think it's protocol to airlift to Flagstaff. He goes, trust me, you don't want to go to the Verde Valley Hospital. They'll kill you.
And that's where you were taken, right?
I was taken to Flagstaff Medical Center, but he said the closer hospital, they would kill me.
Oh, well.
So it sounds
like the whole area is a cesspool. Jeez, a medical cesspool.
Talk about a place you don't want to have a health problem. My God.
Well, we're joined by Basil Valentin. Basil, have you followed Ben's stunning experiences of awakening terrified in a hospital with on a vent? Have you followed that over in England at all?
I'm sorry to say I haven't, and I don't think many people in the UK have, but from what you've just said, it does sound like a particularly harrowing experience. And was it necessary, Ben?
Oh, no. Ben's made it very clear, Basil. It was not necessary whatsoever. He was conscious and alert with minor injuries. The whole business was fraudulent. The EMT giving him a sedative appears to have been completely unnecessary. That so they could present him as having problems he did not actually possess, and they could put him on the ventilator and begin to collect all their bonuses. I think this is fascinating. And we're sorting out multiple evidential indications that this is a scam.
Yeah, no, the whole bonuses thing for treating so-called COVID patients does sound like a scam. You see, with respect to healthcare, I come from a very, very different background. I know a lot of people in the United States decry our National Health Service, but I can assure you there would be real riots in Britain if they tried to take it away from us. One thing, of course, there's no question of anybody being paid a bonus for applying any particular sort of treatment like that. That's just not how the system is structured. A lot of people are very worried that there are attempts to privatize aspects of healthcare in the UK, to sell off and subcontract particular services, and that's been going on. But in general, you know, we didn't react to the so-called pandemic very well at all. Waiting lists grew much more here than they did in other countries. I've just heard that in the Netherlands, there was only a 4% increase in waiting lists, whereas over here, all kinds of non-COVID related illnesses, including cancer screenings, were postponed and all that. But I'm making the point very long-winded way. At least we don't have nonsense like bonuses for treating people in a particular way and box ticking for revenue purposes, you know, which.
Yeah, a car accident all of a sudden turns into COVID on a incubator.
Right. Exactly.
How did that happen exactly? In that 7 hours.
Think about how genius this is to cancel all elective surgeries, all screenings. Remember, first wave of COVID, they were furloughing all these nurses. They're like saying the hospitals are full, but they're simultaneously laying them off. And these nurses have time to make choreographed dance videos all over the place with this bizarre marketing campaign for healthcare workers. So they cripple the hospitals by removing all of that money, and then they give it back to them as incentive bonuses for everything COVID related.
Yep.
That's truly bizarre. Here we had a different scenario. A series of huge COVID hospitals, COVID dedicated hospitals were opened, including the Nightingale in a large exhibition center in London. Hundreds of beds, you know, set up within the space of a fortnight, you know, divided up with room dividers, fully staffed, the whole lot, not a single patient, not one. You know, the early predictions of the number of people that would need to be hospitalized were wildly exaggerated, as indeed they have been throughout the so-called pandemic. And while, as you say, there were stories of hospitals full, we saw on social media some videos of people sneaking into hospitals, having a look around, finding that they were actually very, very quiet, you know. And the whole ventilator thing, when, as we know, with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, various other protocols that could have been applied were dissed, and instead this sort of mechanical breathing system was enforced on people, often fatally. I mean, one of the big things to come out of the whole scamdemic is the abandonment, the failure to look for reliable early treatments, and when they were identified, they were suppressed. Now, of course, that may be because if effective early treatments are available, you don't get to use the so-called emergency vaccines. You don't get the permission. Is that all there is to this story, or is there another, even more sinister side?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ben. It would seem to me that the money trail is perfectly clear, that the amount of money given for every single action that they do that they can slap the COVID tag on, it's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars all the way up through the end. They clearly removed the treatments, as you were saying, that were working. Where are all the lawsuits against people like Dr. Zelenko and all these other people for getting injured by hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin? They don't exist. These people got better. So,
I wanted to mention about the COVID tests. The COVID tests are not that fast. You can't turn around a you can do a home test and get a fast result, but for the purposes of a hospital where they have to be a lot more official, they're not going to be able to turn around your COVID test that fast. I thought that was a little sketchy.
Well, what about the rapid test, though?
They can. It's almost like a home test, but I'm just asking. It's not really an official test. There's kind of a different process for that. So the fact that they're telling, when I was in the hospital in 2020, they put me in a hospital bed. They were going to schedule surgery for Monday, and they gave me a COVID test to make sure I don't know what they would have done if I hadn't passed the COVID test. And then they came back in the next day and said, okay, you're good for surgery. It took them a whole day to turn that COVID test around. Giuseppe, you got any kind of insights on that? How modern COVID testing works?
Well, there are.
It's not that fast. Not that fast.
No. Typically not. And we don't know what they used. It seems as though was there even a test? I mean, how do we know that young nurse who was kind of mouthy based on Ben's other interviews that I've watched? She is just rattling off, you have COVID, you're on morphine. Typically those three drugs are not administered simultaneously because they'll kill you. I mean, those are all powerful, powerful, opioids and synthetic opioids. I mean, there's just so many weird aspects that make no sense to this whole.
that all make it look as though this is a contrived situation to produce a predetermined outcome
right.
to win another death due to COVID.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Big bucks are going to flow in.
But if there's a COVID test that was done on Ben, then it should show up in the medical records. That's another thing
right,
to keep an eye
exactly.
on. And be really alert on this stuff. I mean, just dot every I and cross every T. That's how good conspiracy theorists work, right, Jim?
Right.
you're talking to one of the greats here, James Fetzer.
Russ, I'm impressed with how much Ben has already been sorting out on his own. I mean, this is really remarkable. And I think this client in connection with this wonderful attorney would be a dynamic duo to expose this COVID fraud. This is really good, man. I'm very impressed by all of this. Giuseppe.
Well, I'm curious to get Ben. So you woke up in this hospital and you feel a tube down your throat, which is a very unpleasant feeling. You look around, you see you have an IV, you probably reached down and saw you were catheterized. And so it had to be literally massive epinephral or adrenal rush for your fight or flight survival mechanism. So, something woke you up and then something gave you the incredible surge of epinephrine, much the way the classic tale goes of how did the mother lift the car off her child in the accident? Well, because she got that short-term boost, which is how you probably could pull out all those invasive intubations and then, be lucid and deal with it. You were like so flooded with epinephrine and cortisol. You were just racing. I mean, what was it like to go through that? Describe it.
It felt like everything was one event. So when you tell a story, it's linear and, you go right in order. So as I tell the story, it sounds linear. When I feel what happened to me, it all felt like one event and I knew exactly what to do. The surge of energy was connected to the removal. The removal was connected to the confrontation with the people. The clarity of mind was connected to getting answers, of which I got very few. But at no point did I feel like I was not leaving that place. And, when you look at the technicalities of, because they never asked me to fill out, against medical advice form to sign me off. But the criteria needed, at least in my cursory look around, is that if you could be a danger to yourself or others, they can forcibly keep you there. And they didn't do that. So I was assertive enough. I felt in control. I felt like they were kind of cowering below me and just didn't speak much. And I felt like they had no idea what to do and they couldn't keep me. And I just felt confidence the whole time.
Well, if
you handled this so damn well, man, I can't believe my hat is off to you. This was wonderful. The way you handled it is just impressive as hell.
You know, the people that he encountered there when he got out of the bed, it may have been sort of the lower tier people, and maybe the heavyweights weren't around at the time. Have you ever considered that?
Yes, 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 Russ, I think you're right.
Who are the heavyweights in that hospital? I mean, who is ultimately responsible for putting you in that situation besides these underlings? And isn't it interesting that you just deal with underlings?
Yeah, like I was, I'll call her Portly. The doctor was a portly woman, probably 55 years old.
A functionary, yeah.
And then the two young gentlemen who looked of Hispanic origin, they couldn't have been older than 24, 25. This was not like, at no point was some big kind of like security thug, like a big dude in there.
No, well, Russ means authoritative on the medical scale, you know, the higher level administrators. Russ, I think once they got him in there on the tube, on the ventilator, they thought it was done and their presence wasn't necessary. So when Ben came around, he was, as you implied, dealing with lower level flunkies who had no idea what to do to cope with this conscious ambulatory patient who was able to walk out. I think you've got it right.
Yeah, I think your comment is right too.
Well, if you think about it, they were going by their instructed protocols. Anybody comes in, they're in a bad way, we're going to put them on. They were taught to put people on the COVID protocol. So they essentially were halfway down the path to euthanizing you if what was in that cocktail was anywhere near those three powerful opioids and synthetic opioids, you weren't supposed to wake up. And the fact that you just came through is almost mystical that you awoke from that. And so it's unbelievable. And I don't know if you catch some of the chat, but I'm monitoring three chat rooms right now, and there's multiple people talking about the horror stories of other hospitals doing just that to their relatives and blah, blah, blah. And I know, Basil has covered some of this stuff, on the 21st Century Wire. Those guys are doing a great job when the first wave of mass murders occurred in the first world over this scamdemic. So it wasn't your time to go, clearly. I mean, is that how you feel?
The way I felt is the way I felt it. It felt like a surge of energy and there was no thinking and it was autopilot and I felt confident and I was getting out of there. I do, of course, think, you know, perhaps somebody leaned on the turn off the opiates button accidentally and turned it off.
Well, you know, I have a saying that I've always used throughout my life, and it's don't fuck with a fucker.
I love it. I love it.
Basil, would you like to add a few further thoughts?
You're muted, Basil.
Sorry, I didn't realize you were talking to me, Jim.
Yeah.
Well done. That's not what you can say, really. But, you know, one wonders how many other people in an equally vulnerable situation didn't have the strength of mind or physical strength of purpose that you had, Benjamin.
I think you got it exactly right, Basil, that this Ben was lucky, fortuitous. He had the strength of mind and courage of will. I'm so impressed. Russell, further thoughts?
I pretty much said what I've got to say. I'm kind of a believer in the story now. I was skeptical in the beginning, but after this conversation and kind of considering certain angles, I think that something happened And I think we need to dig a little bit deeper to find out about that missing 7 hours and who is responsible. And that's the medical records, which they have to give to you. It's cut and dry. They can't refuse to give that to you.
I think Ben has a hell of a legal case against his hospital, the EMT, everyone who put him on the vent, the whole bit. I think this is fascinating. So, Ben, I reiterate, when we finish our conversation, you call that guy ASAP right there in Flagstaff. He's going to do you a wonder of goods. And look
what's
up
his name again?
Kevin Harris. Kevin Harris. I'll email it to you.
Yeah, okay, please.
Right, what, Giuseppe, why don't you look it up too in Flagstaff, his firm? And we
oh, sure, I can
Ben,
do that.
Give
yeah.
Ben the phone number to call.
Sure, I can do that.
Ben, I think that Russell has conveyed just the right outcome here. I mean, your story seems superficially kind of implausible, but once you look at the details and dealing with you directly, I, too, like Russell, have no doubt about it. And you saved your own life. My God, congratulations, guy. You got a few more days left on planet Earth.
Well, we know that from the get-go, the system is very corrupt system we're dealing with. So that does make it more plausible.
It does, yeah. That it's just kind of remarkable. The near hospital, which would have killed him for sure, was super. But I think it's because the other was flexing their muscle to make the money off of a case like this, which was probably perfect for their COVID scam to get big bucks. And I think Giuseppe's got it exactly right. You were just lucky. That cocktail they were giving you intravenously was intended to mean you were permanently unconscious. You were not supposed to survive.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think so because the timeline stretches too far. An uninjured person who's had MRIs, x-rays, no internal bleeding, everything's okay, does not need to be under the influence of these, this cocktail of opiates, that far removed from the accident. There's just no explanation for that.
Well, I want to thank Ben so much for joining us for hour one.
Yeah, Ben, this has been utterly fascinating. Thank you so much.
Yeah, please come back if you have new information.
Yeah, yeah, we're all on your side. Reach out to the attorney, and we're giving you the info. Just be sending it to you now, Ben. Good luck.
Good luck, Ben. Good luck, Ben.
You did.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of a library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio. 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 Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Giuseppe and I are here with Basil Valentine and Russ Winter. And Russ, I want to say I thought you just made a series of very astute observations in relation to Ben, and I like the way you dissected the case and agree with your conclusion. Well done.
Thank you.
Giuseppe.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
We can, Russ.
Okay. All good, Russ. All good.
Okay.
Further observations about the case? I mean, you did sum it up very nicely.
I would really like to hear the medical reports and really look at that closely, the little stories they told about him having COVID. That needs to be in the medical reports. You get this pattern of lying that we're very astute at analyzing. That's what we do. So we could apply that to this case. I don't think it's over. I think the medical records really need to be scrutinized. And maybe hear the hospital side of the story. You know, why did they act so punitively?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there's big missing gaps. I mean, and now it's this one guy. I mean, he's a free spirit, no doubt, because he was driving up there to work on a music project, and that's fine. But now he's – one individual against a local rural bureaucracy, and you know he's going to get blocked left and right, no doubt. But hopefully, I mean, he's a sharp guy. Hopefully he can get, he just needs one clear piece of real evidence that this occurred, as he said, and in their medical records. And then you go to Kevin Harris and suddenly justice can be served.
I don't think he's going to have any difficulty putting together the evidence, Giuseppe. I mean, you know, putting him on the IV, all that stuff is very closely documented and monitored. I think this is a winner for this attorney, and I will be very surprised if he doesn't just grab right onto it initially. and make.
Yeah, and if they don't come up with the documentation, then that just proves negligence.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. Giuseppe, did you have thoughts about Basel and Russ's further contributions today? I welcome them both, of course.
Well, why don't we ask each gentleman? Let's start with Basil. Basil, anything that you would like to discuss today?
Well, Jim made an interesting point just before the break that the way hospitals around particularly Western Europe and North America reacted to the advent of the so-called pandemic, the abandonment of certain protocols in favor of others, does appear to have been orchestrated at some level, and unpicking it won't be easy, in order to fit a predetermined narrative.
Yes. I think that's quite right. I expect Russell would agree too.
The severity of the whole thing was undoubtedly amplified way beyond what was actually the case. You know, or what somebody called, I heard somebody refer to legacy media, lying corporate media, call it what you like. I heard somebody refer to it these days as regime media.
Oh, that's a great one.
You know, your CNN, BBC, The Guardian, New York Times, WAPO, MSNBC. Regime media went out of the way from very early on, long before the actual number of case numbers or deaths. I mean, it now turns out that the death numbers of those without pre-existing comorbidities were vastly inflated anyway. But in the very early days, I was suspect because The Guardian, for one, was highlighting the dangers of this particular flu epidemic in a remote province of China weeks before it reached our shores, as if it was an inevitability that we should all start being scared of it now. There was a great deal of predictive programming from the regime media, and then when it arrived, in inverted commas, to the extent that it did, the gravity of the situation, and therefore the legitimization of what turned out to be totally counterproductive lockdowns, etc., was somehow justified in the public mind. So, you know,
did we lose you, Basil?
I
just muted so someone else could jump in, Jim, so you could pick up.
Basil, I wanted to ask, what's been the reaction in the UK to Boris, you know, relieving most of the restrictions? It appears they're laying the groundwork for Biden to do the same here on his State of the Union. All of a sudden, governors in multiple states are lifting their mask mandates. You got the experts on CNN and MSNBC suddenly taking a more nuanced approach, talking about getting rid of a lot of these mandates, targeted isolation for those who are actually sick, which obviously ought to have been the agenda from the beginning. But what's the reaction to what Boris has done? And is the public there aware of the ICC complaint that it may have motivated his action, which is being investigated by the British police?
Those investigations, the ICC, there are one or two things going on, you know, rather like
the meet and greets.
Sorry, I'm getting a clip ready. Go ahead.
Rather like the sort of investigations into historic child abuse among Indigenous children in Canada and that sort of thing. I'll be very surprised if that goes anywhere. You know, I mean, I would like it to. I don't think it's motivated Boris. Boris has been motivated by his own political survival more than anything else. I don't know if you've heard about so-called Partygate.
Oh, yeah, sure. And
what appears to be a concerted attempt by the usual bad faith actors to unseat Boris, because for all his faults, Boris is fundamentally libertarian minded to some degree. He once said that if Britain ever introduced identity cards, he would cut his up and eat it. Now, of course, you know, as Prime Minister, you don't get to rule the roost in quite the way we anticipate. All sorts of forces are placed upon him. But people in this country are very glad that we've had the restrictions lifted and that the remaining restrictions are due to be lifted a month early at the end of this month. That was announced yesterday. They've climbed down over the mandatory vaccinations for health service workers. Too late. Too many of them, unfortunately, took the jab because they thought they were going to lose their job. And the health secretary is now trying to sort of bring it back via the back door. So, you know, there are still lots of battles to be won. And yes, you're right. You know, they're slowly walking things back a little bit in the States, but this is a world war. And as in any world war, there are skirmishes going on all over the place all the time. Look at what's happening in Ottawa, where Trudeau is continuing to hold his authoritarian, you know, deeply moronic, plain, nasty World Economic Forum line, refusing even to talk to the truckers and yet claiming that he represents democracy. You see, you know, as you know, Jim, we've got this strange situation where once elected, leaders like Biden, even though he wasn't elected, or Trudeau, via our entirely imperfect plebiscite system, can then claim some kind of elected dictatorship authority, and that any other form of popular protest is invalid. So, you know, these skirmishes are going to continue. We seem to be winning a bit in this country. We seem to be winning a bit in Scandinavia. France, Germany and Austria, very different. In Austria, they're going to start checking you in the street and going house to house with their mandatory vaccinations. So we shouldn't declare victory just yet. There's a long, long way to go. But gradually, across Western Europe and North America, people's perception, both of the efficiency of the lockdowns and the vaccine, is starting to wane. Everybody's starting to say, we've had enough. This is over. We've all had enough. Thank you very much. And, of course, the latest is now we're all supposed to be screened for HIV. Two British members of Parliament have made publicity videos showing themselves getting screened for HIV. Where's this come from? Of course, this is because HIV is a side effect of the vaccine.
Yep.
They're going to find it very, very hard if lots of people start presenting themselves as being HIV positive and they're all vaccinated. That on anything else.
Yes, well, I think it may have been Giuseppe who described, you know, the coronavirus as HIV for the lungs. Giuseppe, I think it's very clear the Democrats, fearful of the bloodbath they're going to endure in the midterm, are trying to take mitigating steps to benefit themselves, and that, as I've been foretelling, Biden at the State of the Union is going to mimic Boris and claim to be the victor who vanquished the virus. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, Jim, and the virtue signaling wannabe celebrity hipsters have a new poster child to champion the vaccine, and I'm going to play this clip, and this was at Russ's site as well. I saw it a couple days ago. This is a comedian named Heather McDonald who has, with another comedian, Chelsea Handler, has been like real, real upfront. They're doing a Proud to be Vaccinated tour together. And here, watch this or listen to this.
I don't mean to brag. I don't care. But I want you to know, double vaxxed, booster, flu shot. And I'm going to be honest. I have the shingle shot, too. And I still get my period. What? Yes. Traveled, went to Mexico twice, did shows, meet and greets, never got COVID. Clearly, Jesus loves me the most. Seriously. So nice. So nice. I don't mean to brag. I don't care, but I want you to know, double vaxxed.
So, Russ, you put this, here it is, yeah. Right here. You put that on your that is too much. She gets her delayed vax reaction, passes out, fractures her skull. I laughed. It was Schadenfreude.
Did you hear her breathing? How much trouble she was having breathing?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, she's death protest too loudly.
yeah. So, yeah, it's – Jim, it's going to be an unprecedented
– Schadenfreude.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Schadenfreude,
yeah.
It's called hubris for crowing like that.
Yep, unreal.
As Shiva, amongst others, said, pride goes before a fall, quite literally in her case.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, that is that. If that isn't the poster child, Jim, for everything that's going to happen to the Democrats, to these face diaper wearing virtue signaling communists, communitarians, it's all going to unravel really bad for a lot of them, Jim.
Oh, I think you got it exactly right. And, you know, I'm just thinking when it comes time when the Republicans start making their campaign commercials, they have unlimited resources. I mean, the way they can savage the Democrats, just show the streaming migrants coming over the border, just show the supply chain problem, just show soaring inflation, just show the empty shelves, and just show the price of gasoline. The Democrats are going to be slaughtered. And frankly, there's nothing they can do to forestall it.
There is, Jim. They can always rig the election.
they'll try. But the fact is, too much evidence is emerging now about how they did it. I think that's the reason they're now realizing they have to come to grips with the issues that are upsetting Americans. And they're going to do their best to draw them back. They're trying to, mock heroism or courage by Biden in relation to Russia, which is all contrived. It's Blackwater's already there. The plan is for Blackwater to slaughter a bunch of villagers in eastern Ukraine who speak Russian, so the Russians will feel disposed to come to their aid. Then when the Russians show the documented, the government has already explained it is a false flag. Russia just made this all up. The problem being, once they start introducing false flag, the people start thinking about it. It's a concept they haven't fully appreciated in the past, but now they will see how the government does this again and again, and we can start rattling off one case after another of precipitating a war based upon a false flag. I think this does not have a happy ending for the Democrats, who are doing an excellent job of self-immolation.
Right.
Russ.
Well, I'd like to ask Russ, Jim. Russ, you've been doing a great job over at winterwatch.net, and then ask Basil to jump in. To me, Pierre Trudeau is a political dead man walking. He just doesn't.
Justin.
Justin Trudeau is a political dead man walking. He's done. He's the first true casualty of the worldwide silent majority waking up. The Canadians are done with him. And so your thoughts on Justin Trudeau, Russ?
Well, both Justin and Joe, Dementia Joe, are running low 30s in the approval rating. So I think those are accurate. I'm surprised that many people support them. The only reason they support them is they're just libtards.
Right.
But, I did kind of want to mention something about Trudeau. Can I do that? Did you get my
link? Please, yeah, absolutely. Hey,
of course.
Okay, I wrote an article. Now, I just watched David Bett doing an interview with, I'm terrible with the names. Yeah, he was doing Jordan Peterson reacting to David Bett. Now, David Bett is a pretty cool guy. He does value entertainment. Anybody ever watched him?
I've seen his stuff. Yeah, he seems like a cool guy. Right.
He's kind of good because he entertains conspiracy theories and at least kind of has some fun with it and treats it somewhat seriously. It's within his repertoire of things that he looks like, the Kennedy assassination, things like that. So he's talking with Jordan Peterson, and he says, So what do you think, Jordan? You think that Justin Trudeau is the son of Fidel Castro? And, of course, Jordan Peterson's role is to just act super cool all the time.
Right.
You know, act incredulous. That's his little shtick. And so he kind of acts incredulous and says, well, it's just a sort of a satire that they're running on old Justin. Let's take a look at it. Let's take a look at the super strange relationship of Margaret and Pierre Trudeau. This didn't take too long. So Joan Trudeau, Margaret Trudeau, was born in 48. She comes from the Sinclairs, which are a leading Illuminist family. She's bipolar.
Hold on. I don't know. We're not taking calls, you know. Okay, go ahead, Russ.
Okay, she's a social advocate for bipolar disorder, manic depression, which we just talked about a little earlier. And if you've been around people that are bipolar, and I had an old friend of mine that was bipolar, it is really a wild ride. And she was crazy. She was sleeping around. She would go to the clubs and hang out with the Rolling Stones. I mean, she was just banging every rock star. Imagine a little while she was married at a very young age to Pierre Trudeau. And, you know, you see Justin himself. He's always getting teary-eyed and sobbing publicly. He's just a really strange character himself. I think he's kind of bipolar. So Pierre Trudeau met her, Margaret, when she was 18 years old, 30 years age difference, when Trudeau was Canada's Minister of Justice, and basically pursued her. And then after secret engagement, 53-year-old Pierre, who had since been elected prime minister, married 23-year-old Margaret. Now, they always say, when they try to debunk this, that they didn't meet Fidel Castro until Justin was 4 years old. And there's pictures of them, and they're very friendly, and Margaret has her arms around Fidel's, a lot of physical contact. Obviously, very, very, very friendly. But what's kind of overlooked, and this comes from John English's just book, Just Watch Me, The Life of Pierre Trudeau, that the couple traveled several times to Cuba, and for Fidel Castro to have impregnated Margaret, first of all, look at the pictures of the two, Fidel Castro and Trudeau. I've got them on the article.
Oh, okay. I have right now. I have up on the screen the six photos side by side that just show the physical resemblance at various. It's undeniable.
But what's the evidence that Fidel Castro impregnated her?
Oh, let me get that article up. Is it recent?
Well, that Russ, if as you observed, she was banging every rocker in sight. She would bang every celebrity, every
pop. Of course, it was all set up. It was set up. And the Trudeaus were in the Caribbean on sort of a honeymoon in April 1971. Okay, Justin was born on Christmas Day 1971, so. Right in that period, they went to, quote-unquote, an unidentified nearby island, and they asked the media for complete privacy. I have the article from the Ottawa paper in my article. It says, Bridgetown, Barbados. Just Trudeau and his wife left here Monday by chartered plane for a quick side trip to an unidentified nearby island. Well, they met Fidel, and Fidel banged her and got her pregnant. That's why the resemblance is so strong. The news clip was published in the Ottawa Journal on April the 13th. So that meant they probably met April 10th, April 11th, something like that. So Justin was probably a little bit of a preemie, a couple weeks preemie, but certainly within the range of Fidel being the father. So She's a bipolar flower child of 23, and they had an open marriage in quite kinky ways. And part of the deal was, hey, you can come down, you're going to meet Fidel Castro and you can bang him. That happened. We're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. These people are freaks.
Oh, no doubt.
I like this, Russ. I think the other side of the coin is that Justin Trudeau, like many other prominent politicians today, are being blackmailed, a Jeffrey Epstein style. I think they've got something on Justin that terrifies him more and being declared to be a tyrant over Canada. He's more afraid of being exposed. I expected child sex, maybe baby rape, something on that order that has Justin Trudeau completely.
Yeah, something freaky like his parents.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Something very, very sick.
I mean, Margaret Trudeau had an affair with Ted Kennedy, with Ronnie Woods of the Rolling Stones, according to Keith Richards in Life with Mick Jagger, probably with Jagger himself. She smuggled drugs in the Prime Minister's luggage and made scantily clad appearances in Studio 54. But she had a clear history of sneaking off to party and all that came with that lifestyle. But not with Fidel? Everybody's incredulous. Oh, but not with Fidel. Really? So, and Castro himself had an incredible sexual appetite. Been reported he would sleep with at least two different women per day and would send his bodyguards out to find the most beautiful ones for his pleasure. As pointed out in a 2014 Vice article, there's a local custom in Cuba in which any woman who doesn't know who the father of her child is will call it Fidelito or Little Fidel. And what about Pierre Trudeau? Here's a Globe and Mail article. Now, this article is being read by a lot of people. This is getting to be one of my more popular articles. So according to the Globe and Mail, Trudeau would often invite two girlfriends to the same event. Alan Gottlieb, his ambassador to Washington, D.C., complained about one dinner he hosted for Trudeau because he had three girlfriends there. At 24 Sussex, he carried on downstairs, even though Margaret, from whom he was officially separated, was still in the residence upstairs. They were married for about 5 years, or 6 years, and half the time they were separated.
Russ, I love what you do with your research here. This is just sensational stuff. Basil, would you like to add thoughts?
Or should we call him Fidelito?
Fidelito.
Fidelito. Now,
the whole legitimacy, illegitimacy thing has come up in the past with world leaders, with royalty. It's kind of related to the whole, you know, is Michelle Obama a natural born woman? that is to say that they like to punk us.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We're opening the lines to callers. You can reach Mitchell at 540-352-4452. I repeat, 540-352-4452. Mazel, just to return to the final issue you mentioned before the break, I've done a great deal of research. Michelle Obama was born Michael LaVon Robinson, played football for Oregon State before he transferred to Princeton and assumed the female persona, began calling himself Michelle. I have photographs of Barack and Michelle together where Michael clearly does not have a female anatomy. We have other photographs where you can see that Michelle has a package that most women do not have. We have the physician who looked after her during a campaign stop in Trent, walked into her taking a leak standing up in a trailer, paid millions for his silence, who's explained, Michelle Obama is not a man who underwent a sex change operation. Michelle Obama is a man with breast implants and a huge shaving bill. I've documented this many places. Check out my fake news issues of identity, and you'll see a photographic substantiation of what I'm reporting here. It may or may not come as a surprise, Basel, but we're being surrounded by body doubles all the time. Even the present Joe Biden is actually not the real Joe. And Hillary used 6 or 8 body doubles during her campaign, even during the national debates with Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. We do have a caller from the 619 area code to join us. Please just give us your first name and your state, caller.
Yes, long-time listener, first-time caller. This is Dave calling from San Diego.
Yay!
It's Scorpio!
Yeah. Hey, guys. I've been monitoring your show from my guard post here. I'm not a security guard or anything like that, but I'm working for an ex-military guy. So, anyway, guys, tremendous show. Really good. I just had a couple of quick comments I wanted to add in. I thought, you know, Basil made some great comments about, you know, this, we're in a war and we're winning some of the battles and there are skirmishes going on. This is not over. These people are going to sort of morph and possibly go to plan B or plan C here. So, we should accept the little victories we get along the way, but don't let our guard down. And I think part of the game we're playing here is we have to pretend like we have a democracy, right? So they have to pretend like they're listening to the will of the people. So let's hold them to that and dance this little dance as we try to find a way out of the planned tyranny they have. And the second comment I wanted to make was about, Fidel Castro and Trudeau. You know, I think there's a lot of evidence to back up what Russ is saying and other people have been saying about Trudeau being the bastard child of Castro. And I think on a bigger picture, there's lots of evidence that there's lots of world leaders that are bastard children. They just don't want us to know how small the family tree really is. You know, another notable example with plenty of evidence is Bill Clinton being the bastard child of one of the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers have had huge holdings in Arkansas for many years. So I think we should really keep our eyes open for more of these bastard children that are actually bloodline people that they insert and try to make it look like, there's a big variety of people that come into top office, you know. So we should keep an eye out for that, guys.
Yeah, Barbara Bush and Aleister Crowley stand out.
That's a really good point, Scorpio. And it's in order to keep it within the family. There's no doubt about that. Keep power in very few hands. I also think there's an element of just the more we are punked, the more unreality is presented as reality, the happier the Illuminati are. They just like everything we believe to be a lie, right? So it's just, you know, it's Masonic trickery for the sake of it, to some extent.
Right, absolutely. I call it black magic.
And it confirms when we thought these guys were bastards, they really are.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot more of them running around than we think. So we should keep our eyes open for new examples, because that's part of the game. They don't want us to know how small the family tree really is, guys.
Yes, yes, yes. That's a nice point, Scorpio. I'm really delighted to have you here. Russ, further thoughts of yours?
Well, you know, I got to mention this one because I just reran this article called The Freemason Spy Lodge and the Case of the Worshipful Master and Pedophile Keith Harding. Now, most people here know, you know, Keith Harding is not a household name. He's out of Britain. He's a leading Freemason. There's a lodge in Britain called the Mercurius Lodge in Gloucestershire, founded by the UK spy agency, the GCHQ, and it boasts of its heritage of spies on its website. It's known as the Spies Lodge, and over the years, many intelligence officers have become members. Well, Keith Harding was the worshipful master and most senior member of the Spies Lodge. So let's take a little look at Keith Harding. The Daily Express revealed that the Lodge's worshipful master, Keith Harding, was convicted of indecent assault against four children, ages 8 and 9, in 1958. He was classified as a Schedule I offender, which means the offense remained on his criminal record all of his life. His name was also on a list of 400 on the Pedophile Information Exchange, PIE, seized by police in 1984. And Harding told a friend that he kept hidden in a safe more than a list of 1,000 pedos with prominent names, including top politicians from the Thatcher era. He hung out with Leon Britton, Cyril Smith, and those are all, you know, Britton was a high-ranking official, including Home Secretary, center of a lot of controversies, including rape allegations. He kind of hung out with Jimmy Savile. I have a photo in the article hanging. They're sitting there meeting, and they got a little boy sitting next to him. But what? How in the world would a spy lodge award somebody with highest honor and most senior and important functionary of any Masonic lodge put him in as a 33-degree Mason of this particular lodge? That just doesn't seem credible at all.
Marshall, would you like to pick
Well, hey, guys, up? I'm going to jump off the call. I want to thank you guys for taking my call, and I think Russ is making a good point. Okay. Freemasons will hand out the 33rd degree award to people that do favors for them or people that are on the inside. And, yeah, despicable behavior is certainly one of the ways you can become a 33rd degree. So, guys, thanks for taking my call. I'll be monitoring the transmissions. See you guys later. Bye.
All right, take care, Scorpio. Terrific.
Yeah, the whole Savile business reared its head again in the last couple of weeks because Boris Johnson accused the leader of the so-called leader of the Labour Party, Sir, in inverted commas, Keir Starmer, of complicity in not prosecuting Saville when he, Starmer, was director of public prosecutions. And as a result, the establishment, the neoliberal establishment press, have been piling opprobrium on Johnson, who has refused to back down. It is a fact that Keir Starmer was the head honcho in the public prosecution's office at the time when evidence of Saville's wrongdoing was presented to him, and they decided not to prosecute. Saville, of course, was a close friend of former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, and believe it or not, was even introduced to the royal family with a view to his solving the marital problems of Charles and Diana. It's since come out that a serial rapist and pedophile, and quite possibly, or even probably, a murderer and a necrophiliac Satanist as well.
Jeez.
Yeah, we should do a whole show on him sometime.
We should do a Saville show with the four of us, and that would be great. And Scorpio, of course.
Yeah, it's wonderful to hear Scorpio's voice.
So, yeah,
you
they
some,
do.
You got some background noise going.
Way or another, and there are shortcuts into it. Saville was also feted by the Pope, believe it or not, who gave him some tremendously distinguished medal only granted to a few people. It's the old hiding in plain sight.
And this I have a video with Saville doing an interview with Alan Alda on some talk show, and he talks about taking two young girls in the boot of his car, which the boot, I guess, is the English expression for trunk. And then sneaks them into the Buckingham Palace, takes them up to see the royal, and presented these two little girls to the royal. And Alan Alda looking at us right there. You can watch it. This is undeniable. It's still up. You can see it with your own eyes, right in your face. And Alan Alda is just looking at this guy like, what the F is this all about? I mean, just shocked. And Saville's gloating. He's got a big kind of a shit-eating grin on his face. He's breathing real heavy, like he's getting kind of sexually excited telling a story.
Yeah, he really was the most unbelievable monster. But
and just right out in the open, just very in your face.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you're going to lie, if your whole life is going to be a huge charade, then the bigger, the better. And that's the case with these deep events, with the COVID crisis. The bigger the lie, in some ways, the easier it is to get away with it. Because people think, oh, no, surely not. Surely that can't all be made up, you know?
We have a second caller on the line. John, please give us your state and join the conversation.
Oh, yes, my name is John from Lee's Summit. Very glad to talk to you guys again. Good to hear from you, James. My question is for Giuseppe. Who are the only people that are allowed to sit in the front row at a funeral?
Who are the only people allowed to sit in the front row at a funeral? Immediate family.
That is correct. Well, go back and look at George Bush Sr.'s funeral. Who sat in the front row? Trump, Obama, Clinton, the Bushes. And Trump shook whose hand right out of the gate? Oh, yeah, Obama. Like I said, that boy's a box of rocks, and I still got my Corvette, James.
Yeah.
Hey, I love you guys' show. Keep on spearheading the New World Order. I'm still on your side. Yeah, we may disagree on some things, but who doesn't? You know, but I'm firmly a believer that Trump is an insider. Like I said, I have a Corvette challenge for anybody that can prove me wrong. And they are all somewhat related. I mean, why is it that we are the only ones that have families sit in the front row? No, it's everybody.
That was a state event. That wasn't an ordinary funeral. That was a state event. So you'd put the former.
I'm not going to play devil's advocate and make an excuse for that.
Well, look, John, I appreciate your sharing your thoughts about this. I'm glad we have another call.
I appreciate you letting me, too. Hey, you guys have a good day.
Take care, John.
We're glad you called.
Yep.
Bruce in Texas. Bruce, join the conversation.
I'm Bill Clinton in Arkansas. How you fellas doing? Oh, Kelsey, she's actually Webster Help baby, just so y'all know.
Oh, God, there's another one. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that is so obvious, right, when you compare the pictures.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Jesus is strange.
Yeah. I mean, spitting image. You look at him, and you know what Hillary tied in deep with him. You know what they were doing at the office. Or Hanky Panky, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah, but Chelsea's a chip off the old block, too.
Yeah.
Yep, she sure is. Hey, guys, I don't want to try to throw cold water or fight with y'all. Just then. I just want to get a little bit of perspective because I live some EMS time myself. And before I start, I testified against an idiot medic who was in charge of a system that killed two people. And so I testified to the State Department of Health here in Texas. They got the operation shut down and hit his license suspended.
So, Bruce, let me interject for a second, Bruce, so everyone knows. You were, for 10 years, an emergency medical technician, an EMT technician, that's correct?
That's right. Four of those years, an EMT, and then the other six, paramedic. And I did 911 and also worked offshore, and I had advanced training, like suturing.
What's your read on the protocol of Ben's case?
Well, the pre-hospital thing, I mean, sometimes you'll get guys who cowboy, you know, they want to do as much as they can, even over the top of what the protocols call for. But they had to cut them out of the vehicle, right? That's what I heard at the start of the show.
Yeah, jaws of life, right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Jaws of life. Okay. And so if you have someone who's really, like, fighting back at you, like, right off the bat, like, they don't seem to be cooperative. Like, ordinarily, if you have an accident, you're glad that here's EMS to help you out, you know. And so maybe he wasn't, you know, just mad at the world or whatever, or he just expected the people to put a chip in him. But, you know, at a scene like that, you can have somebody who's hypoglycemic, you know, from diabetes, took too much insulin. You can have a closed head injury. You can have someone that had a stroke. Someone who's on fentanyl or some other opiate. So you don't know and you can't tell. So what you do is, you know, if it's necessary, you take them down the medication assisted intubation or rapid sequence intubation, and you fly them to the nearest level one trauma center where they can shoot them into the CT and find out exactly what's going on. So, you know, if he complains about the helicopter ride and all that being expensive, that was for his own benefit. Now, at the hospital itself, once they determined he didn't have any life-threatening injuries, they should have reversed an intubation and brought him back. But that's another issue. So that's where I'm – that's my perspective on it, guys. That's about it for me.
Russ, thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not a EMT expert. I'm not a medical guy, so that's kind of why I asked the question. You know, what's the protocol?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of guessing they did react to something that they perceived and maybe overreacted to try to secure the situation. But the big question I have is the need to sedate somebody for 7 hours. What do you think about that?
Right. Yeah. No, that's kind of questionable. You know, from what I've heard, you also have other witnesses at the scene that could be, you know, if you want to file a lawsuit, firefighters, maybe other bystanders, what have you. But an off-road vehicle, if he was racing to the desert or driving to the desert, is that correct?
Well, he just ran off the road on a highway.
Well, he ran off the road. A single vehicle accident like that, I mean, there was a guy just back last December that had a heart attack and crashed into the ditch in front of my house. And he was in his 40s. And I went to check him, and he was already coded. I mean, his head was swamped. He had no pulse or nothing. And he was, you know, behind the wheel, and the airbags didn't deploy, so it wasn't the trauma from the accident. And EMS showed up, and they didn't even work him. But actually, what happened was he overdosed on meth and had a heart attack. So you never know what you have in a single vehicle accident like that. And if he started, you know, freaking out because he saw a needle or whatever, you know, maybe it wasn't, you know, a life-threatening situation, but the medics don't know. And that's my perspective on it. But I got to jump, guys. But thanks for taking my call. Good show as always.
Thanks. Thanks for calling, Bruce. So what do you make of that, Russ?
Well, you know, I don't know that the behavior of the EMT was out of line, because the guy maybe was a little agitated or disoriented, could be the word for it. But we just don't know what they administered to him. I'm just, like I say, I took a sedative for my surgery. It was 45 minutes and I was being woke up. I don't get that part of it. There's too much missing information. So of the information that we know about what happened at the scene, maybe the behavior wasn't that extreme. That's kind of my observation. But then something sort of changes because it lasted too long. And he's out for too long. He's missing too much of his life. That's the suspicious part.
Well, if you look at it from the point of view of which hypothesis, if it were true, would confer the highest probability on the evidence, I think the hypothesis that this was an arrangement to get him into a COVID ward so they could make money has a higher probability, confers a higher probability on the evidence and the way it was handled than that this was actually routine and all these things just happened coincidentally. Giuseppe, your thoughts?
I think you both make excellent points. It's just a peculiar scenario all the way around. I think that the fact that it was in rural Arizona, and having lived out there for 6 years in rural New Mexico and frequently traveling to rural Arizona. I mean, it is the Wild West out there. You know, it's not like a big city that a lot of people play fast and loose. I could see where something nutty like he experienced happened, and they may have thought they were doing the right thing, or there may be, you know, a more nefarious, agenda at play, trying to rake in money for the hospital. But either way, it sure seems like what he went through is real. I mean, he's been on so many interviews and his story never deviates. So,
hey, yeah, they may have made the call once they took him to the hospital. So the EMT guys may not necessarily have been in on it. They took him to the hospital and then the hospital just looked at this guy and we've got a live one. That could have happened that way too.
Yes, yes, I agree with that. By the way, from the highest authority, toning down, Fauci hits at when all COVID-19 restrictions may finally end in the U.S. White House COVID advisor Anthony Fauci said the U.S. is past the full-blown COVID-19 pandemic phase, as more and more officials suggest an end to mandates and rules. Speaking with the Financial Times, he said, since there's no way to fully eliminate COVID-19, we are looking at a time when we have enough people vaccinated, enough people with protection from previous infection, that the restriction will soon be a thing of the past. I believe this is one more contribution to Biden on the 1st of March, declaring, you know, he's going to relieve the restrictions in a hope that it's going to benefit the Democrats. As we approach the midterm elections, it's going to be too little too late, but I think they're going to make a concerted effort to try to mitigate the issues that have most infuriated the public and cause them to despise Biden more so than any other president in American history.
Well, the interesting thing about the statement that you just read there, Jim, if that was a direct quote from Fauci, was that he said, we're nearing the stage where we have enough people vaccinated and immune from previous infection. Whereas a few months ago, wasn't it the official line that there was no such thing as immunity from prior infection?
Right.
Yes. That's a good catch. Good catch, Basil. I like that. Yeah. Russell?
Well, you know, the key, though, is that people need to go on the attack because we've been lied an awful lot. Now they're kind of backing up on their backpedaling, clearly. And maybe they're kind of done with this particular project and they have this HIV thing in the wait. So they're backpedaling, but people need to go on the attack. That's what's so great about the trucker strike. It's on the attack against the people that are responsible for this stuff. That's the key politically.
Yeah, exactly.
So for them to just slide by and say, hey, you know, we gave it a good go. We weren't right on everything, but forgive us. That's not going to cut it.
Jim, I think we have one more caller before the show ends. John, area code 913, are you there?
No, I brought in John before I did.
Oh, you did? Okay.
That's what happened.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's have a few final thoughts. Basil, would you like to offer a final observation?
Just cycling back to the midterms, it seems to me that there are two Republican parties, if not more at the moment. There's the Republican Party of Liz Cheney and Mitt Romney. There's the Republican Party of Mitch McConnell. And then there's an insurgent Republican Party with candidates popping up all over the country who haven't been elected to Congress before, who are of the sort of Trumpian January 6th has been blown out of all proportion. The election was stolen. COVID has been a farce, etc. There are those candidates as well. And there's no real, other than Trump himself, there's no real leader of the Republican Party. There's something of a power vacuum in American politics, period. Can you see how the cards are going to fall on that score? If the Republicans gain control of Congress, what that is going to look like? And whether or not there's any individual who appears to be emerging carrying the stars and stripes.
Well, it would be the fallback would be DeSantis, but this is a whole nother show, Basil. We're so glad you could join us today. Ross, you are terrific across the board. Giuseppe, a further final closing thoughts on your part, my friend?
Well, closing thoughts is we predicted this very first show with Dr. Judy Mikovits that this was going to end now. So this is all scripted, and it's time to take back our world. Yep.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle, live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Dr.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs, government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict. But